did last week spend a week in Poland, Hungary, Slovakia. We did a lot of grave hopping.
There's a big tzaddik there nearby.
Yes. I don't know where Samsaif is there. We went to Karastia, Uhel, and Lisk. Now, what we did, now, Matzah Shabbos, last week and a half ago, was the yard site of the Naim HaMelech. Matzah Shabbos, I was a week ago, my kids switched my phone. This is just a partial look, first of all, of the people in the outside room, and you can tell, 100 people davening at the Kevin. This is 1 o'clock in the morning. This is 1 o'clock. This went off, I was there for 4 hours, with probably 10,000 people there. It was Williamsburg at 8 p.m. It's on loudspeakers in Yiddish. This is Lezhensk. And the one before, which I don't know what you put on here, if you want to get a good laugh, fully catered. We're talking about, there was food for 10,000 people.
Whoa.
Hot food, cold food, drinks, wine, orange. You're in Poland.
It was his yard site?
Last week, Sunday, was the yard site. I was the Matzah Shabbos, but it's a 24-hour event. I mean, more. People there for Shabbos. Right? But that, right.
That is a chassid?
Naim HaMelech is like, they call him the Rebbe of ML. He's really from the first Hasidim in Poland.
Zusha
is his brother, Zusha, right? Brother, so, which means when you discuss the early Hasidim, when you start those early years, most of those Hasidim didn't begin as Hasidim because there really was no Hasidim. They began as anti or neutral, and then they slowly turned. Naim HaMelech was from the biggest of the Rebbes. He, remember, the Hasidim really began in Russia, right? The Babbage is in Russia.
Yosef of Poland.
Yaakov Yosef, that's also, Yaakov Yosef told us that's also earlier. That's all in Russia.
It's beforehand.
Yeah, but Naim HaMelech is from the first. It's only 20 years before, not so much before. And then the Naim HaMelech came into Poland, and he started with famous for him, but he then had 5, 6, 7 great Talmidim. But that was, we landed, not that this is the whole speech tonight, but we landed in Varsha and Warsaw. Yeah. And since we didn't have kids, we were able to. I went to places I was never before. I went to Poland already several times with the students, but then I was limited. First of all, no concentration camps. We've been to these places. It's not really to get the emotions of the students. I went for the free, went to Davit, went to pray. So we got off the plane running, landed on the plane. First stop is Pshischa, which it's a highlight. On my bucket list, you might say. The Pshischa is something I've mentioned many times here, many times. There were two Pshischa rabbis, they're right next to each other. They were at Chayz Mulablin time, one of the students at Chayz Mulablin, but the first Pshischa Rebbe was called Rebbe. The first Rebbe of Pshisch was called the Yid HaKadosh. And you have to think in history of Judaism, how many people, I was talking to a random person there, how many people in the history of Judaism, we're very serious about our nicknames, by the way. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that discusses nicknames. Rebbe Meir was Iker Hari Hari. He uprooted the mountains of mountains. And the Gemara says, whoa, is he Iker mountains of mountains or only mountains? And there's a whole page in Gemara in Sanhedrin that discusses the nicknames of people. Is he a great person or a great, great person? Here in America, on talk shows, we talk nonsense the whole day. Who's the greatest basketball? Who cares? But the Gemara spent time, what's a person's nickname? That's how serious it is. And now, and that, my point is, that's how serious nicknames are. And you have a person called the Yid HaKadosh, the Holy Jew. How many people can you think of offhand in the history of Judaism are referred to as HaKadosh, the Holy One? The Shloha HaKadosh, the Ari HaKadosh. You're down to under a handful. Ari HaKadosh, that's 1500, a couple hundred years before. The Shloha HaKadosh, 1600s Prague. We're talking about very few, and he was called the Yid HaKadosh. That's real, real. And then when he passed away, the one who took over was also now the Rebbe of Pshischa, but unrelated. And he was of Simcha Bunim. Simcha Bunim of Pshischa. Pshischa is the city. And I was my first stop, my bucket list.
Did he pass away in the Warsaw Ghetto?
No. We're early 1800s now. We're early 1800s. And there was tremendous opposition to Simcha Bunim, but a person who the rest of the Hasidic world came out against him. It was a very serious time in Hasidus when it wasn't, didn't have the stronghold it has now, didn't have a stronghold then, and the rest of the rebels were against him, Simcha Bunim, for it depends on which PhD thesis you're going to read. He was a controversial, obviously a giant. And at the time, there was a famous wedding that took place, and the Abderov, the Oyv Yisrael, was from the ancient, he was from the older statesman of the previous generation. He was still alive. So they decided that it was a Rebbe marrying a Rebbe's, one Rebbe's grandchild, one Rebbe's grandchild. So all the Rebbe's in Poland were coming to this wedding. It was a major event. And the opposition decided, we're going to approach the Abderov, we're going to end this finally, we're going to get the Abderov to agree with us, and it's over. We're going to put the Simcha Bunim and the Talmidim out. And our Simcha Bunim, all these people, again, had levels of prophecy that are beyond our comprehension. And before the wedding, he sent a couple of his students there. And what he claimed was the smallest of his students was the Imre Emes of Ger, not Imre Emes, Kaddush Harim of Ger, the original Ger Rebbe. And he came to the wedding, and there was stirring going on, and Oyv Yisrael was an old man. back then people didn't live that long. Might have been in his 80s. And there was stirring going on, and he started saying it's time to put the mecherim to make the official cut. And a lot of this, again, Hendrik's PhD thesis, you read, a lot of this was anti-Shabbat three stuff. There was still remnants going on in people's heads. They were nervous of this potentially what they held was a new movement. And at one point, someone thought of something and learning. Someone asked a question, and no one had an answer. And the Ayyub Sol looked at him and says, not one person at this wedding has an answer for such a thing. Not one, all the big rebbes in the whole Judaism is here. And Chiddush HaRim got up and he gave the answer. We've discussed Ger, the genius of Ger, for the last 500 years, for the last 150 years. Chiddush HaRim was one of the closest giants in brain cells, probably a 210 IQ or something. And he gave an answer, and the Abderav called and he said, who are you? Younger man, who are you? Announce yourself. And he got up and said, I'm the weakest of Rav Simcha Bunin's students. End of the game, I think. Game, set, match. And that changed. Now, who were Rav Simcha Bunin's students? Just for the record of people we might hear. My bucket list, man. Kotsk. Varka. Alexander. Ger. These are the I don't know what the world would have looked like had they all been on the outside. We can't imagine the world because these became the giants of Polish Jewry that were also a main level accepted by the Lithuanian world as well. The Lithuanian, the Misnagdim, had no issue with these giants. Till today, the Svasemis, the grandson of Lishon, these are basics on people's tables. Everyone's learning Svasemis. You don't go a daf in art school shots by without learning Svasemis. Unlikely. But then what the giants who made it into, who penetrate now, Kotsk, you're going to write a lot of Torah. Who doesn't talk about Kotsk? Kotsk's son was a Sachachov dynasty, Abinezer. Hilchas Shabbos is learned with the Mechasinach and the Abinezer. And you know how would I value the Mechasinach when I put them in the same sentence? So this dynasty became. So my first pit stop was Pshischa. Sarashak. We got there. We couldn't get into the basic forest because these places are locked. But
what's it called?
The cemetery was locked. And we're standing there, like Minas Shemayim, and a Chassidish guy's there. And he tells us, oh, someone told us he's sending someone to open the door. We said, who? Oh, you know, they opened a house, like a guest house. That's the one thing that what was blown away by Europe this time. I was there before COVID many times. In the last 5 years, Poland has become Little Williamsburg. Now, you go into the big cities, no.
But I mean, there are people who don't live there. They just come for
it. But there are houses that are 10 times the size of what we're sitting in right now.
Yeah.
Fully stocked, fridge, desserts.
So food. They're owned by
Mikva.
Jews. Or maybe
owned by Jews. Jews own, they're owning Poland again. If you put it on camera, the Jewish landlords are back.
Like 10,000 Jews, Sammy said right now, there's like 10,000 Jews in Poland.
Right.
There's still 10 million Poles.
In so, I'm just in the land now. And only around these graves. It's only around these graves. So I get to Pshischa. The guy tells us there's a house down the block. There's a house down the block. Let's go down the block. So I go down the block, and there's a massive house being built by one of the Biala Rebbes. The Bialas are in the block of the Pshischa Buddha. The Biala Rebbe's standing there. He came in. He comes over to me and my two people, my three people. And he knew the other one's name. But not only that, I don't know if he gets this on camera. This is Lezhensk. Let me go back a little bit. But there's a home there, an old shul that's 300 plus years old, that the community there is a Hasidic guy living there. And he is, this is the outside. I don't know if you get a clear picture on the outside. And then you go to the next picture. There's a 300-year-old monstrosity of a shul that the Nazis took over, made it into, I forgot what the guy said, cattle farm, I don't know what they said. This huge, tremendous building, stables, and they're rebuilding it. But he told me that the guy was, and you said, we walk in, the guy's offering us everything we want. Food, they don't pay. He showed me on the outside, he was giving us a little bit of a tour, showed me on the outside, it was, I can't even describe it, but like a handcuff reaching out of the building. And it's covered by a plastic, like, container, so no one should steal it or bang it or take pictures of it, behind those, he tells me there's the only shul in Europe still standing that had this thing. I know a little history, I'm like, what am I looking at? And he goes, if someone was excommunicated, in the old days, they really excommunicated people. If someone's excommunicated, they would bring him into the shul, handcuff him to the wall. Charles won't like this next line. And when everyone would come to shul, they would, according to this rabbi,
just like they go to a church.
Excommunicated. That's what he said. And he said that this is such a valuable piece of history that the local government in Pshischa, again, we're talking about farmhouses, in Pshischa, they value this, and they're like, They're telling this guy, you can take over, but this has to stay. That's how valuable it is to him. That was stop one. Oh. Stop one, which I, wow. And I was never there. Then we get into the car. No kids, no concentration camps. We drive. I didn't do any driving. I'm guessing an hour, but I have no idea. Radomsk. I've never been to Radomsk in my life. The great Radomsk dynasty also. They started with the original Radomsk Rebbe. There were a few of them. Sadly to say, a dynasty that was wiped out in World War II. Some of these dynasties, that, you have to realize that when we talk about today, the big dynasties are Satmar. Okay, that's Hungary. That's a different area, which I went to Hungary on one day. That's oil. So that's later on. But the original dynasties of let's say, in pre-war Europe, the big two Rebbes were probably Ger, which survived. And the reason why Ger survived is he had always been Zionistic and told people to buy land in Eretz Yisrael. And he started a community in America. There was a Ger community. So when the war broke out, he already had people set up that can pay the money to get him out. And they snuck him out of the ghetto. The Ger Rebbe survived. One of the great stories of all time. So he, once the Rebbe makes it out, and there were some people, even though it was decimated, they're able to, on some level, start over. But the borderline equated Hasidus would have been Alexander, a Hasidus that sadly barely existed. It's only existed for the few people who thought, because why? Because the Rebbe, with his, I'm guessing, a number 300,000 students. So some of these dynasties, Radomsk had the same problem. Radomsk was a giant of a dynasty with probably 150 satellite schools, with each Rebbe was, again, giants of giants. And the last one was killed in the Warsaw Ghetto. He had one child, I think if I'm right, correct, him and his wife and the child killed like that. Now, you could always find a cousin, but it's not the same. It's not the same. So we went from coming to Radomsk. We got to our place, Radomsk, 11:45 p.m. We're, again, we're in the middle of nowhere. These are towns, like in upstate New York. There's a big house that was there for what? Now, food wasn't as much, but it was set up. We walk in, four guys. There's seven guys there. It's 12:15 at night. Good. We were waiting for you. We knew we'd have a minute time for Meyer. I have a picture of me dominating Meyer right after these pictures. Here I am, with a bunch of guys who I don't know, Hasidus, all getting together with Davi Meir. Davi Meir. So that's the nighttime. Beautiful. I mean, it's a great feeling, first of all. Great feeling. And
you spoke English, Hebrew, what language?
Those guys were Yiddish and Hebrew. I'll tell you better, just in case it's on tape. I have a good friend of mine who I spoke about in the past. He was the editor for Chaim Knievsky. Was the editor of Chaim Knievsky Svarim. I sent out a thing about him. Very good friend of mine, Uri Tager, a real Litvish learning type of guy. Brilliant in the Litvish style. But he is a descendant of the Radomsk Rebbe. I took one of his books there, and I got to the Radomsk in the Beis Medrash. I sat down, and I was learning it. I said over a couple of things. And then I go to the Kever. I have a connection right now. I'm saying over your descendant's Torah. There's a connection. Shishka, there's a connection. I'm happy everyone's enjoying this. That was at night. It's real late. Next morning, I woke up, if I got to sleep, because of the accommodations, back to Radomsk. Next door to Radomsk, which we didn't know the night before, one of the Hasidim came back. We wanted to make a game of Shabbos. So the guys you met the night before, we'll meet you tomorrow, Shabbos, 8:15. We're like, listen, we got to go to Krakow for Shabbos. We don't have time for this. We got a lot to do. We're trapped. They said, oh, we'll meet you. So we came 8:15, and they told us, oh, you know that down the block, there's another Beis Achnasa's house, another guest house, and the guy's there, endless food, mikvah, the whole thing. So we go down the block, and I have a picture of this guy on my phone. This is going in order of my pictures as we're doing this here. Is the Radomsk sitting at his undershirt, but this man lives in England. Okay. Lives in England, and for 30 years he's been trying to build up Radomsk, and he has a house there, a breakfast like in a hotel. And then no one's asked me anything. He reprinted the Svarim from the Radomska. He's telling the stories about the Radomska. He told us a great story. I'll say it over. That he has all these stories. He's like part of the Radomska legends. He said a guy once came to town to try to get to the Radomska. But he's a giant. It's not too, you know, it's not going to go walk in. You don't text them, I'm outside. It didn't work that way. Right? And he did the town, and then he just decided, you know what? I'm not doing this. Every Rebbe officially had like a key to different grades. If you believe that it's a door, some can give you wisdom, some can give you health. The Radomska, among his keys that they say was wealth. This guy was in the city, and then he was staying around. He's like, I can't do this. And he went back. And he went back, and he made a tremendous business deal on the way back. He made millions. Millions of zlatas. And a few months later, he decided to come back. So he comes back, and this time he can get into the Rebbe. He walks in, and he's about to store. The Rebbe tells him, listen, you don't have to come to see me to be successful. As long as you enter the town, you're successful. Great story. I mean, the Rebbe knew. So this man was telling us these stories. And then not only that, as my friend likes to say, the unintended consequences. But talking to this guy only because the group that he doesn't marry with invited the next day, they're about a block away. He tells us, we're going out. The next stop we'll get to in a second. We right. thought it was Radishitz. It sounds all the same with Dom Kravitz, a different dynasty. The Radishitz was a Rebbe to Radom. He tells us, listen, it's not the only Rebbe. There's another Rebbe that's on the way. You can't miss it. That makes sense. The towns will break away. It's called Federbreuz. Believe me, 98% of the people you're going to speak to, even with black yarmulkes, have no idea who the Federbreuz was. He tells us, listen, it's on the way. Here's the guy's number. The local guy takes care of it. Call him right now. Tell him I just told you. You'll be there in a half hour. This is, I can't even say Barkalis. Going to a place that's not so famous, not so famous. Make the trip. Get away from the guy. Comes in. Destroyed cemetery, except for the house of the Federbreuz. We go in there. There's a safer there. And we learned a little bit there. We're learning in the cemetery, whatever. We did it. I am, as usual, if you remember, always put out a small soft cover backpack. Pesach, Divrei Torah from these people. I am doing it now. So if I get them next week, I will come in next week. What the first? There'll be Torah from the Shishkas, both. There'll be Torah from the Dumps, obviously, from two different Radomskas, and now Federbreuz, which nobody heard of. The beauty was, as we're standing there, Rabbi Open wants to say, with Vatar, there's a safe there. And a lot of these oils, we call them, the safe. He pulls out the safe, but a lot of these tents, it's called tents, it's not oils, they're buildings, but they're much smaller than this. They'll have a safer from the guy who pulls something out. He says, it's Vatar, that will be in my God, it's on Pesach. I'm not saying it now, but we should for his mother, but everyone seems to be on this. We're getting most of this. Then we go to Radishitz. One of the guys I'm with, Radishitz, by the way, one of the guys I'm with is an anacle of the Radishitz. This is how the Radishitz, this is the oil that is buried in. This is nuts.
Yeah, that's it looks like renovated.
I'll show it to you better. And then it gets even better. Go to the next picture, because right now the Kula, that's a,
architecture.
Yeah, now look at this. The next picture, no, that's not the wrong one, is a house. This is what I want to show you. This is what they're building right now in Radishitz. The Kula Rebbe in Williamsburg is building this right now. K-R-U-H-L. Again, it's a town in Russia, in the Kru, Hungary.
Kru.
Now look at this. They're building this right now. This is going to be for people who come to house themselves. There'll be a mikveh. There'll be food. It's astounding. It's astounding. Then we drive. There's no speed limit on the roads in Europe and some of the highways. Now, so what happens is, I fall asleep, and the guy tells me we're going to try to make it to the Krakow cemetery. There's two big cemeteries in Krakow. There's the old cemetery from the 1500s, 1600s, and the new cemetery from the 1800s. One of the guys I'm with, he's related to a son-in-law, to the chief rabbi, the Rav of Krakow, pre-war Europe. His name was Kornitzer. But in this old cemetery is a lot of great people. In the new cemetery, there's a lot of great people. I only did the new cemetery one time in all the years. Because again, how much do you do with the kids? You got to figure it out. We're in crack alcohol. So I fall asleep. And I'm like, you're never going to make it. Little did I know when I woke up that we could make it. Because there is no speed limits. Got to the cemetery. I would say 4 minutes after they closed at 4 o'clock. Erev Shabbos. And Shabbos starts at 6. We want to get to the cemetery. Because we're leaving right away from Shabbos. And get to these few holy graves. But it's 4:05. But beautifully, sometimes accidentally, if you drop a $50 bill next to someone standing there, they will, by mistake, open the cemetery and look away. All accidental, no connection to anything I'm saying right now. And thankfully for me, I didn't see it. I was still in the car, but that's what he said. And we got it. And again, you'll see the next week, there's a lot of names there. A lot of good names, big names. The Ma'ar B'Shemesh, the first generation, going back to early 1800s. And as late as Kornitzers, who are Anakel Chassam Seifis. The Chassam Seifis' son became the Rav of Krakow. Chassam Seifis died in 1840. And his son was the Rav of Krakow. That's going to be in there. But in my Haggadah the next week is when he became the Rav of Krakow.
Chassam Seifis.
No, Chassam Seifis, good. Chassam Seifis had many giant children. The Chassam Seifis, his son, the Bechor, the oldest son, took over in Pressburg. The yeshiva and that. He had another son, nickname, very similar spelling, Michtav Seifer, who became the Rav of Krakow. Now, the Michtav Seifer, when he first came over Krakow, preview in the Agado, in his first speech, he came in and people were antagonistic toward him. And he said, I want to tell you something from my father I learned. I might have started a little bit wrong, but I wrote it down a few days ago. I don't know exactly what he said. My father, Sam Seifer, world renowned, he was the number one man, right, in the world. He says, my father He taught me a lot of things before I came to Rabbi Crack. And he told me, again, I might be embellishing, people are going to be antagonistic. You're a rogue. You have to represent me. You have to be nice. You have to be sweet. But by the way, just in case you should know, I want to give you one of the secret names, the secret codes. But if you use that code, what you could create, a negative people toward the antagonist, will work tremendously. So he said, my father gave me that code. Guess what? No more opposition. Opposition decided, you know what? Let's be nice. Let's play nice. Oh, that's then. We're in the Krakow Cemetery. Again, we're talking about giants, giants, giants. Great. Came at the Shabbos, barely the skin of our teeth. Shabbos was great. We're in Sarah Shnira. We're by the Ramoshal. Ramosh 1500.
That's the one who made the Beis Yaakov.
Beis Yaakov, that's already 1900. But the Ramoshal is in the 1500. Shul was probably. Ramah.
Moses Isserlis was there.
Ramosh has a cemetery at home. We couldn't get into the Shabbos. That's the Hall of Fame cemetery, I call it, of the Ramah. The Bach. Taisus Yom. Megala Mukas. As I said, that's in Krakow, the old cemetery. As I said before.
Ramah was from Krakow.
Ramah was Krakow. Ramah Krakow. As I said, I'll tell you two stories now because he said it. So one, for your mother. So one story is, what I said is we take names seriously. On the tombstone, take that very seriously. On the tombstone of Megala Mukas, the word Megala Mukas means the revealer of hidden secrets. When you name your book the revealer of hidden secrets, you got big shoulders. That's not a name I'm putting on my book. No. When you write that at the name of your book, you're good. And then on his tombstone, it says that he used to learn or met Eliyahu HaNavi. We don't exaggerate on tombstones. We take tombstones seriously. So when they're writing that in the 1600s,
which one were you in?
Megala Mukas, his name is Rav Shapiro. Shapiro's a popular name. He's in that cemetery not next to, near the Ramah. In the back is the famous Tosfos Yom Kippur. That's what it says on his tombstone.
And that's bold.
That's bold.
Wow, that's very bold.
That, when it's on a tombstone.
But you have that. We could read that book, and could you look at them like, that's not a secret, or, oh my God, that I don't understand it. It is a secret.
I will go one step further on Chaskel Elo. You can't read that book.
It's not for me.
Yeah.
I want to
say
one word.
I would say it's a miracle, without being offensive at all, if you could put five lines together. Because, first of all, it's written half in code, Gematrius, fascinating stuff. I agree, beyond me, most of it, I'm saying. But Rapinchas Friedman from Belz, he tries to take out something and build on it, and it's poetry, artistry. Shabbos is a Krakow, Sarah Shnira Shul, we've got some other groups there. Friday night Shul is a couple hundred people there. Singing, the beauty. You know what the beauty is also? You're sitting on a Shul by the Ramah, and you know who gets along? Everyone. Blue and white yarmulkes, black yarmulkes, the high fur, spodix, Chabad, everyone's all on the same page. Because he asked about Ramah, I wanted to tell you a famous story. So the famous story was, I might be mixing up the two. The story's true. There was a person with a certain sickness, and the doctors, we're talking about 1700s. Doctors told the buddy, 12 months to live. 12 months to live. Doctor 1600, no trust. Went to the local rabbi, I think it was a Shvas Yaakov, whoever it is, it's all the same. He says, oh, I hear. I'll tell you what to do. Move to Krakow. And never leave Krakow. Long life. People know this, didn't ask any questions. He says, this rabbi's nuts. Anyway, what do I lose? I'll take a chance, right? Moves into Krakow. I don't know what Krakow looked like in the 1700s. Not like much better than anything else. He's living there 1 year, 2 years, healthy, loves it. Everything's going well. No problem as long as it's great. Life's going great. I think it's one day, you know what? That rabbi was good, but how good could he really be? You know, they're always a schmendrick who doesn't really get the whole system, right? And he decides he's going to go visit. He's going to go visit his rabbi to find out, come on, what was the real secret here? Steps out, dies. The widow, the kids, they come running to the rabbi. What's going on here? He says, why do you leave? I'll tell you the simple. There's no extra secrets that I have. I'll tell you how it goes. He has a certain wound in his lung. And the laws of wounds, we're not allowed to slaughter an animal for kosher. It has certain 18 wounds. One of them is a hole in the lung. He says, this wound, the Beis Yosef, which we rule like, that's the Sephardic custom, holds it's a wound. So we're very careful about it. Which means you have that wound. But in Krakow, which is the city of the Ramah, Ramah ruled it wasn't a wound. So if you go move into his city, then in the world above, they have to say, that's not a wound. But you walk out of the city, the wound's back.
Oh my God.
There's a legendary story. Legendary story going back a couple hundred years. So they're saying, I'm only telling you because for his mother, the Ramah was the rubber crack. Shabbos is beautiful. Beautiful. You're diving in a shul. Before we take the shul, okay, remind me, I have to get to next week about the famous thing of the Ramah shul. But the Ramah shul is right there, attached to the cemetery. Again, Hall of Fame. I'm mentioning names. These are all giants. Let's do something quickly in the Ramah. Why not? and will connect to putting into the Agada. We have an odd custom that on the Passover night, we wash our hands without a bracha. Mm-hmm. Why are we washing our hands? So the most famous answer is because it follows the next thing. The next thing is karpas, you dip. And we have a custom that the old law seemed to be a law that before you touch vegetables with wet hands, you have to wash your hands. So we're not so strict about it the whole year. You don't wash your hands when you eat vegetables. But on Pesach night, it's a holy night we do. That's what the standard custom is. The Ramah writes, there is an halacha, sadly not kept by everybody, that before each prayer, you're supposed to wash your hands. He says the Haggadah of Magid is not only praise to God of what happened in Egypt, but it's a prayer to God as well to be redeemed. You're going to go and pray, wash your hands first. The Netziv, oh my God, the next week. The Netziv, because you said Varsha, he's buried in Varsha, so I'm 2 days early now. I'm on Shabbos and I came back Tuesday, so my end stop was Varsha Cemetery. The Nazi did not destroy 250,000 cemeteries. Amazing place to pray. The Netziv said none of them. The night of Passover, we go back in time. We time travel. To as if we were in the Beis HaMikdash. And in the Beis HaMikdash, you know what they did? They ate the Karban Pesach. In the Beis HaMikdash, you know what else they did? They wore nice clothing. That's why we put on a kittel. Put on a kittel, not because it reminds us of the dead, because that's what they did 1,000 years ago in the Beis HaMikdash. You know what else did the Beis HaMikdash? During the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they were worried about contamination. So since we're back in time to the Beis HaMikdash, of course you wash your hands. That's what they did 1,000 years ago. The Netziv, one of his famous pieces of the Agada, he wrote on the Agada, is describing how much of what we do on Pesach night is representing what they did 1,000 years ago, more than 1,000. Basically, just 1,800 years ago, not 2,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago. They go back in time, we're going back in time, and we're acting as if we were in a basement dish. And in the basement dish, we have certain customs. One of them was, you wash hands. Everyone did that then. When contamination was important, everyone did it. So we have three reasons on potentially why you wash your hands. One is the vegetables, and halacha, which means it's like we're keeping it tonight, because why? We want to be better tonight. Two is prior to praying. And three is no. It's because that's what they did then. And you know why you put on your fine clothing? That's what you eat. And he answers many questions. Many of the questions he answers throughout the Seder is we're doing now as if we're sitting by the basement. There's much more stories to say. I'm only on Shabbos. I did prepare something tonight. Maybe I'll say it next week. But the idea was that I had a lot of people in mind. I had the Tuesday night class in mind. I had many tefillos. And not me, but hopefully from the holy places, my tefillos are answered not just for me, but the whole Klal Yisrael, and that we don't need to wash our hands in 2 weeks because we want to pretend we're there. But hopefully we will be in the Beis HaMikdash in 2 weeks.
Man, I'm not